Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a very fun guest for us today. Andrea Robbins is the breeder of Gumby's Chinese Shar-Pei and one of the founders of the National Club in Canada. So this is kind of a cool thing. So welcome. Thank you, Andrea, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we ask everybody for the 411, right? How did this happen? How did this happen to you?
Soon after I got married in 1983, my husband saw a picture. I even asked him today. I don't even know where he saw the picture. He remembers that the breed was in the Neiman Marcus magazine at one point, but it wasn't that. But he did see a picture and thought they were very neat dogs, and I got him one for his first birthday after we were married.
Wow. And so when was the breed accepted in Canada, and how did your role in the Canadian Parent Club wrap around that?
We were recognized by the CKC. I couldn't give you an exact date, but it was 1991, I believe, because the AKC followed about a year later in 1992. So we were, at the time, of course, all of our dogs were registered with the Chinese Shar-Pei Club of America, which was our registering body way back then. And we just worked very hard with the CKC, the president of the CKC at the time, and did all the necessary steps and pedigrees and got our foundation stock preliminary registered with them and finally got acceptance.
Wow. So that's quite a process from 1983. So, I mean, you were involved with this breed for almost 10 years before they were even recognized to be shown at CKC or AKC shows.
That's right. That's right. We were traveling and doing specialties. We were holding little specialties after Best in Show at all breed shows and begging some of the judges to stay and judge us, or we were traveling to the U.S. to specialties.
Wow. I love these stories of breeds that have come into recognition here that are clearly ancient, ancient breeds. And,
right.
and that process
right.
is just incredible to me.
Right. Yeah. Way back from the Han Dynasty.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's our segue. Let's talk about Shar-Pei. I mean, this is a fascinating breed. I've handled just a few of them, so I have just enough information to be dangerous.
That's terrific.
But the breed you were talking about, they go back to the Han Dynasty. It's a breed that's been talked about for eons, literally.
Right.
So
right.
give us a little bit of that history and help us understand, the listeners get a real handle on this breed that today is pretty well known, really.
Yeah. They were originally used as a guard dog and a fighting dog, and there was an appeal made by a gentleman by the name of Matt Golaw back in 1972. The breed was becoming extinct in China. They were not very good fighters, and apparently they didn't taste good, so they weren't really useful very much anymore, and they were becoming extinct in China, but a wonderful breed. Very, very loyal. And so this gentleman, Matt Golaw, sent an appeal to a magazine in the U.S. begging the American breeders to save his breed.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've heard a little bits of it, but it's just such an incredible story. And
yeah.
so everything that we have in North America today stems down from those handful of dogs that were still in China.
Correct. And they're quite a changed breed, actually, from the original ones that came over as well in many ways.
Right. I would like to talk about that a little bit more here in a minute, because what I wanted to start with, and I think it's so interesting in every breed, it's a fascinating point to me, the breed's history, and this is, again, an ancient dog, how does that impact it today as a family dog, as its appearance? I mean, it's a very distinctive breed. Why did they make a Shar-Pei look like it looks, or how did it develop to look the way it looks in China?
Originally, being used as a fighting dog, they say that because another dog would grab a dog generally by the ear to hold them, to pin them, we have these tiny, tiny little tight ears, that would be very hard to grab onto. If they grabbed you by the cheek or the neck, you could literally pull away a little bit, turn, and bite back. So there wasn't a good way for another dog to pin a Shar Pei. But even though they weren't good fighters, they have skin with all the wrinkles and mucin under their skin. They do tear very easily. So they would get hurt very badly in fights. But they were enticing to other dogs to fight because our dog's natural stance with a top line that rises at the back and the tail set so high and the way the ears sit forward on the head pointing to the eyes, they look like they're in an aggressive stance to any other dog. We actually get picked on at the park because of the way we sort of naturally look like we want to fight.
And so that has to have impact on your owners, on your pet population, and how you educate them about owning this breed.
That's right. That's why the breed, when I say it's changed all over the world, we have tried to soften the dog up, let's say, to make them way more socialization, make them a great family pet, which they are. They're terrific with kids. And we say to anybody, take the dog out, socialize it like crazy, and it will get along great with other dogs. But if you don't socialize it a lot, then they can still be that standoffish, aloof dog that they were.
Mm-hmm. And definitely you see that even in the breed today. And I would love it if you could speak to my limited experience that they tend to be very much attached to a person and the rest of the world, they don't care. Is that an accurate assessment?
Not so much anymore. They do tend to love everybody, be very, very friendly and greet people. And they obviously love their owners the most, and they do get a little bit more bonded to one person. But in true essence, they are like a Chinese guard breed, you know, and the Chinese, you know, way back when did not have dogs essentially as pets. And they were used to guard a premises, to guard a farm, and where even today we want them to be more social and more friendly. We don't want anyone to be able to come and steal our guard dog.
Right.
So they have a purpose. They are great with the family. They're great with friends, but they should still be on guard and still have that true nature in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's so important when we talk about our breeds, when people are looking to purchase a Shar Pei, this isn't a golden retriever, and we need to be very aware of that.
Yeah. Some of them will act like one. Some of them will be friendly like one initially, but no, true to nature, they are still supposed to be a standoffish and a little bit of a guard dog.
Right. So again, great segue, talking about your prospective buyers, your pet owning public, the folks who are going to have these in their home. In addition to that piece, what do those folks need to know? If I'm going to come to you and buy a Shar Pei, what are your going to be your questions or your requirements or your suggestions?
I strongly suggest that you be alpha. You should not let the dog run the place. You know, a lot of people that have these, you know, really easy nature dogs that can sort of go and do and everything. These guys can be stubborn. They're respectful, but they do need training and they need to know who the boss is. They need to know that they need to respect and listen and do as they're told. And if not, then yeah, they'll run the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That leadership role is real important.
Right. It is. Because they can be stubborn, and but yet they're extremely, extremely smart, and they want to learn and they want to please. So don't confuse them and just let them know who's boss.
Nice. I like that. Don't confuse them, I think, is very important.
Yeah.
Health. How are they health-wise? You know, is this a breed? Yeah, I know it's a... I don't mean to go on a touchy subject, but legitimately, people should get to know, you know, good, bad, and ugly.
Yes. Our most common health problem is kidney failure. They suffer from something called amyloidosis, which is a plaque deposit, most often on the kidneys, but can be on any organ. There is finally a test out there to help us breed smarter, but it exists in every single pedigree. And conscientious breeding is, you know, what makes you either have a dog that, you know, will hopefully live 10 to 12 years versus a dog that might not make it past 2 or 3 years. So, you know, I guess I know every breed, especially purebreds, we frown upon the backyard breeder and everything. But in our breed, you know, you really don't want to go to somebody that isn't really conscientious, that are only breeding the healthiest of the healthy dogs, because we do have that component to our breed. And of course, we're prone to the cancers like every other breed.
Yeah. I know there's got to be a genetic component to cancer, but at a certain point, it's so widespread, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One of our bigger cancer issues is mast cell.
Mm.
And I even believe there might be two different kinds. I don't know a lot about it, but you know, one seems to be hereditary and one seems to be almost, we see it quite often in an injury site.
Weird.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. And then thinking about this from a judge's perspective, right? So judging this breed, it's a unique breed. I mean, there are so many just fascinating, cool little details about this breed that I love. So what are the hallmarks? What are the things it has to have this to be a Shar Pei?
Well, it has to have type, as any breed. In our breed standard, the only thing that it states in our breed standard is that movement is essential. So if you have a dog that is built poorly, moves poorly, it wouldn't be rewarded. If it lacks, of course, type, where it doesn't have some substance to a head. You know, we've got several points to our dogs, of course, that make them different than any other breed. We want tiny little tight ears. We want a nice big fat head. And we want a black mouth, like very few breeds. I think there's, what, three in the world that are supposed to have the black tongue and the black mouth. And then we also have that top line that rises to a very high set tail that comes up over the back. You know, those are the features that most other breeds do not have. That's what sets us apart. So without those few features, I wouldn't think they'd be rewarded, or I wouldn't reward them anyways.
Right. And the muzzle, to me, of course, is always just fascinating. I mean, you can see a Shar Pei with a variety of how much wrinkle they have or what have you, but that big, plushy, thick muzzle, I think, is such a fascinating piece. And you see kind of a, I don't know about a variety, but certainly from super, super, super plushy to not as much. How much does that weigh into it?
As a breeder, I would never look at the overall size of the head as a determining factor. I don't mind a more moderate head if it's put on a well-built body. I can put up with, you know, missing some head for a dog that is really structurally sound, because as a breeder, I feel like I can fix that head. If I don't love a headpiece, in one generation, I can sort of, let's say, plump up that head.
Right.
With proper breeding. Of course, it's going to take me generations and generations to fix a lousy front.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as long, but it's still going to take me a while to fix a lousy rear. So it's one of the things that, yes, you want a certain head and you want a certain, you know, I wouldn't give up my small ears or my little almond-shaped eyes and my sunken or my scowly expression, but I might give up size of head because as a breeder, I know I can fix that.
Okay. All right. And that's excellent. You know, when you're weighing as a judge, these are some of the things you want to know, right?
Right. Well, that's why even when judging other breeds, I try and get into the breeders of that breed's head to say, how do you want us to judge your dog?
Right.
You know, what are those identifying things that you guys feel would be, you know, a horrible thing to go without?
Right.
And is a wonderful thing to have. So, you know, trying
and
to figure out
the breeders.
And
that's why I'm asking. That's why I'm asking. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love Pure Dog Talk. And that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group. This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, Laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love. So now, the other one that I think is always thought has been fascinating is the horse coat versus the brush coat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not something maybe well understood outside your breed. So
that's right.
Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. You get your diehard horse coat people that say, oh, a horse coat and a brush coat should be the exact same dog in a different coat. They're not.
No.
And I breed a lot of horse coats as well. I've had some really big winning horse coats. And in most cases, the horse coat has a different temperament.
Yes.
They're more standoffish and aloof. They're smarter. They're ready to move ahead of you. You know, when you're just thinking that you're about to go out the door, they're already out the door ahead of you. The brush coat, more laid back, more easygoing, more friendly with strangers, more go with the flow.
And it could explain, remember how I said my experience, what I showed were two different horse coats.
right. So we've got enough generations going on that a lot of our horse coats are now that, you know, more laid back, mm-hmm. a little bit more mm-hmm. easygoing. But generally speaking, it's just not the case.
This sort of stuff, just, I am such a nerd. Do you breed horse coat to brush coat?
Yes. We breed brush coat to brush coat quite a bit, and we breed horse coat to brush coat quite a bit, and I'm not even sure if ever in 35 years I've bred two horse coats together. I've seen it, of course. You tend to lose bone, substance, head, but you might get a dynamite coat.
Right.
But,
okay,
yeah,
so that, yeah. To me, that's fascinating. Now, is one or the other sort of, if you will, the original or the traditional coat?
Is the horse coat.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
and
the
so
horse coat,
then
for sure.
What caused, if you will, the development or the involvement of the brush coat?
Oh, boy, that's interesting. I don't even really know, because I guess when I got involved in the breed, which was only about 10 years after they came into North America,
right.
The brush coat existed. My first one, of course, was a horse coat, and the brush coat existed, and the second dog I got was a show dog, and she was a brush coat. Originally, they said that they were bred with a chow to give more coat and to try and explain. There is a third coat type called a bear coat, which is almost more chow-like.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I don't see much chow in our breed except for in the pigment.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be an answer for how we got the brush coats. But I
right.
think that they just came over that way. I think that we just
right.
got horse coats and brush coats, but horse coats were definitely the original that came over.
Okay. Fascinating stuff to me. I mean, this is just totally geeks me out. So. So as a master breeder, someone mm-hmm. you judge, you've been doing this for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
What are the really specific challenges you face when you're breeding these dogs? You know, do they reproduce? All of those questions. As a breeder, what are your challenges?
One of our major challenges is that you can have several puppies in a litter stillborn.
Mm.
That have to be revived, and those fat heads come down the birth canal slowly. So we do revive quite a few of our puppies, but once they're revived, we have no problems. They're great mothers. They're easy to breed. We breed naturally. In 35 years of breeding, I think I had two cesareans 3 weeks apart about 3 years ago.
Wow.
And that's it.
Wow.
So we free breed, we free whelp. I was just joking with somebody this weekend that breeds Frenchies, because they're difficult.
Very.
And I was saying, literally, if you walked out of the whelping room 5 minutes after the last puppy was born and you didn't go back in for 3 weeks, you'd be fine.
Wow.
They're terrific mothers. They take care of their babies. They do everything right. I've never had one lie on a puppy. As far as breeding them, it's really not a lot involved. They're really good. They're easy breeders. I have bred Frenchies. I've had a couple litters of Bernese Mountain Dogs. Again, they're not even free whelpers, and they're great big dogs.
Right.
So they're
interesting.
Pretty
interesting.
Easy.
Like you said, with those big heads, I would have thought you'd be more like a Frenchie or a Bulldog with that level of difficulty. It's amazing that they're still free whelping. Very cool.
Yeah, we're good that way. And, you know, after raising a couple litters of Frenchies, it's kudos to the Frenchie and Bulldog breeders.
Mad props, man.
Yeah.
So what is it that you find the hardest to reproduce consistently. Like, for example, in my line, I'm a freak for fronts. My foundation bitch didn't have a great front, and I've been seeking that front for 20 some odd years, right? So
that's very funny that you say that. My first Sharpay had a bad front. I ran a grooming shop at the time, and a guy that was managing it for me, and I knew nothing about breeding or showing or anything. We just, as I say, bought my husband this dog, of course, with free rights, because nobody held back rights to anything at that time, so we were allowed to breed her and do it. And he looked at her, and he said, she's got a fiddle front. And I said, pardon me? He said, she's got a fiddle front. And I said, you need to explain what that means. And then I would say, for 3 years, every time she'd come running towards me, all I saw was that front. So I am a front hunter as well, and I think it's a very difficult thing to fix. And I think it's a very difficult thing to get. And I think in breeding, a lot of people compromise with that kind of stuff. Well, I can breed to that because my bitch has a beautiful front, so I can breed to a male with an iffy front, and I just don't get why you would. I don't understand why, if something's correct, you would add something into it that's not correct just because it's maybe, you know, up the street, around the corner, in the same state. So right. Very, very picky here what gets bred to what.
Well, it's how we get to be master breeders, I'm afraid.
That's right. Yeah. So very, very little, if any, compromise.
Right. And then on some of those fine details on the breed, the top line, the ears, which fascinate me, just the set on of the tail and all of those things.
Yeah.
Are any of those easier or more difficult as you're kind of always were fine-tuning, right?
Yeah. Again, it's all in the rear assembly. So if you settle for, let's say, not a great rising top line, you're not going to get that tail set, and you're also going to affect your rear. So that's an identifying feature of our breed, is our rising top line.
Right.
So if you're not stuck on making that proper, well, you mucked up your whole rear on your dog, so...
Interesting. Okay. And then just as I'm sitting here talking to you, I wanted to track back to one other thing that you said, because I think it is also sort of an identifying piece of your breed. This is not a, when you say movement has to be there, the movement that a Sharpay should have as defined by the standard is very different. It is not that tremendous reach and drive that so many people are seeking.
Everything on our breed standard calls for moderate.
Okay.
So we don't want a ton of angle and, you know, those big, beautiful angled rears that some breeds have. We don't want that, because although we want our dog to have a beautiful, elongated side gait, we don't want it to be exaggerated.
Okay.
So we do want them to have nice, decent reach and drive, but we don't want things flailing back and forth. You know, it's just supposed to be moderate.
Well, and I think... You know, you're talking about a farm dog, you're talking about something that was guarding property. It has to have that elasticity of movement.
Right.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So any other tips to Sharpay seekers, people who want to own one? Responsible, respectful breeders, preservation breeders, healthy breeders. Yes. What else are they looking for?
For sure. One other feature that is talked a lot about our breed, I guess, is the eyes, because we have these, you know, adorable little almond, deep-set eyes that help us with that scowling look, you know, with the wrinkles on the forehead and those deep-set eyes. We get that look to their faces, but the eyes do create a little bit of a problem in that we do have entropion in our breed.
Right.
So when you're looking for a Sharpay, you want to look for somebody that does have nice, clean, clear eyes. Unfortunately, you can breed three generations of beautiful, clean eyes and end up with a whole litter of dogs that need entropion. But it is something to be aware of, that you just may need to take care of those eyes more than you would any other breed.
Right.
In terms of tacking them when they're younger. Some of them do need entropion surgery when they get older. So you don't want to go into the breed thinking that there's no problems down the road, or, you know, you want to know that this is something that could occur.
Right. And maintenance. I know in our pugs, you know, we clean face rolls, and the two horse coats I showed were not so wrinkly that I had to worry about that. Do you run into that with skin problems, anything along those lines?
Rarely anything like that anymore. Usually, if you have a dog that is so over wrinkled that you've got to clean between those folds, you've probably got a dog that has some kind of a health problem as well. They should not be that wrinkled. We've got dogs that are so nicely wrinkled over the shoulder and even have socks on the back of their feet, but they're healthy. And you don't see skin problems, and you don't see any moisture in between those wrinkles. So that's kind of an old thing with Sharpei.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw it today, it's beyond a skin problem. I think it's more like a thyroid problem or an allergy or something beyond just being a Sharpei.
Okay. Very, very cool.
We fixed that a lot. We, as breeders, we worked a lot of years on those skin problems and that kind of thing.
But that's awesome to me.
Yeah.
That's a win. That's a brag right there, right?
Yeah.
Like, we have made them better.
I have not, of course, been this involved in any other breed the way I am Sharpei. But again, kudos to all the Sharpei breeders that are serious and diligent and have worked together to really improve this breed over the last 25 years since recognition. The breeders have done a tremendous job of taking what was a lot of these little problems and, in essence, fixing them. We're not perfect. We still have some problems like every breed, but we've come a long way, baby.
That is awesome. Okay, well, thank you, Andrea. I really appreciate your time.
No problem. I appreciate you taking the time to learn all about it.
Well, I love learning, and so do our listeners. So there you go.
Yeah, terrific.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.